weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Thanks to the two Johnnies and Afric for all the entertainment this afternoon. It's Tuesday the 19th of March and this is Game On. So with John O'Shea in situ for his first training camp ahead of this weekend's first international, Tony O'Donoghue and Paul Corrie will run the rule over what he will bring to the role.
Austin O'Malley and Brendan Devaney take stock of the county's lording it and languishing in the Alliance Football League. Plus, we'll hear from Paul Townend after his Cheltenham heroics. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or find us on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Welcome along. We have a treat this evening. Tony O'Donoghue has stepped into the studio. It's great to see you, Tony.
It's my job.
We only get to hear you. We don't get to see you. So seeing you in the flesh now, it's nice sitting beside Paul Corrie, who always comes to see us. Very welcome.
Who's very good looking in the flesh, let's be honest.
Well, look, we're not going to go there now. HR will be on to us.
Hang on a minute. I'm here tonight, so we're going to go everywhere.
Tony, you were out today with John O'Shea and got to see firsthand the new setup, the new coach. Staff, how did it all look and feel?
Well, it looked great, to be honest, and feels optimistic. And I suppose every new start, you'd hope that's the very least a new management team can bring. But great to see John O'Shea, Paddy McCarthy, Glenn Whelan, Stephen Rice, and Brian Kerr. To see Brian Kerr in a tracksuit was great. And to see the four goalkeepers, because Derry City's Brian Maher has been added as well. And they were being put through their paces by Rene Gilmartin. Rene, I suppose, because there is an accent, isn't there, in his...
Very good.
Paul
but
know.
He'd known as Rene, isn't he? Yeah. And it was lovely, actually, that the... Thursday is World Down Syndrome Day, and the Ireland Futsal Down Syndrome squad, who finished fourth in the European Championship in Italy last year, they were there today, and they were all lined up, and everyone took a lot of time to say hello to the guys and wish them well. And it was lovely. That in itself was a nice start to proceedings, and to watch them. We had a good long time to watch them in action as well, and some new players that we hadn't seen before, although he was called up before. Sammy Smodics was one of them, of course, and we can talk about that in a bit more detail later on, but he rubbished the notion that there was any chance of him going to Hungary, or that he was in any way in a bit of a strop over not being picked the last time. Finn Azaz was there as well, and that was his first time, his first call up obviously. And Jake O'Brien, who I can confirm, having seen him up close today, is a bit of a monster.
He's huge, is he, Tony?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I did know him from his Cork City days, but like, I think he's a late bloomer, a late developer. He's come on a lot, playing really well and scoring for Lyon. And he's almost been a big part of their revival.
He seems to be a leader
there
for them.
Although quietly spoken, like a lot of big men. But yeah, I mean, is he in line with a chance? I think centre half is where we're, I suppose, best equipped almost at the moment. Maybe with the addition of Sammy Smodics, maybe we're doing better up front as well. The fact that Chidozie Ogbene is doing well, the fact that Mikey Johnson is on absolute fire at the moment. So yeah, there's of course optimism, nice looking setup, very professional. Tomorrow is a big day. I understand that tomorrow's announcement will be in the hotel in Castleknock. So John O'Shea didn't go in front of the media today. He'll be up in front of the media tomorrow, along with Captain Seamus Coleman. Great to see him back and looking fit as well. And the word is there'll probably be an announcement on the new main shirt sponsor tomorrow as well. So, you know, it's been slow but steady. We still don't have a new manager. Lee Carsley is with the under-21s for England, so I'm hearing as well that, you know, there will be reporters in Azerbaijan who will be asking him finally face-to-face, what is the story. But yeah, early April for the new manager. All John O'Shea can do and his squad is put in two good performances and ideally get two good results against two very good teams, Belgium and Switzerland.
So Tony, is there a sense that this is almost a shot to nothing? Two games, one camp, see how we go, or are they still auditioning?
Mark Canham, who's the director of football at the FAI, he's been the calmest man around, I have to say. Anytime I've spoken to him about this, you know, he's been very clear. They've followed a process. It seems, you know, that they've been very clear on this. And he couldn't have been clearer when John O'Shea was announced as the interim head coach. And Eileen Gleeson is a head coach, not a manager now. And the new person will be a head coach, not a manager, although managing is what they'll have to do. And it looks as if they have their man and ready to announce it in early April. But I think John O'Shea can do himself no harm if he does well in this window. A lot of the players talking today, you know, would still have sincere loyalty to Stephen Kenny. But, you know, look up to John. You know, I mean, I can't say too much about some of these interviews because they're embargoed. But just to say that, you know, there's a lot of respect for John O'Shea, the career he's had. And what he's done with them in the under-21s and hopefully what he can do in this week as well. And the team he's assembled, it's clearly a very good, very professional team. And so they've been there since yesterday. I think they had a session yesterday as well, actually. Not all of them, but some of them. And there's a good long build-up now to Saturday. So a lot can be done in that space of time.
Tony, with the way Mark Hanum likes to operate and he likes to have the head coach and the layers underneath, could you picture there being a consistency if a new head coach comes in, or would that person bring in a whole load of new people? Basically, would you think John O'Shea could still stay there, or is this it for him?
I think he could. I think the pattern that they're trying to repeat in the different age groups is to have the similar way of playing, to have an integrated kind of system through the different age groups, and for the head coach to buy into that. But ultimately, you know, at senior level, it is the engine that drives the national team. It drives the income for the association. And if the new head coach finds a way of winning that isn't the same possession base that the 17s or the 19s might want to play, you'll go with that, because that's what at the highest level, that's what top level sport is all about. It's about results and about winning. And we saw that to Stephen Kenny's cost, you could say. Yeah, he gave lots of players debuts. Maybe it was a bit early for some. Maybe this progression and this had to happen, this period of rehabilitation of Irish football almost. But hopefully John O'Shea over the next two games and whoever it is comes in after that will reap the benefits of that.
Paul, new faces and familiar ones. What way do you see a John O'Shea team playing?
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see whether he starts with a back four or whether he stays with maybe the back five that Kenny played with. I think, to touch on Tony's point, our centre halves and our back five probably is where we have the most strength and depth within the side and the most number of players playing at the top end. So you could certainly expect that maybe Collins, Omobamadeli and Dario O'Shea could line up as part of that back three. And then whether, you know, Josh Cullen seems to be a bit of a constant, and then you mix maybe the legs of a Jason Knight in the middle of the park, and I think at the top end of the pitch Evan Ferguson has to play. I mean, Chidozo Benny's in good form and Sammy Smodic, so we've probably got a couple of options in the midfield and final third, whereas the back four, the back five probably picks itself on paper. So you can probably get bogged down in the team, Ruby. I think the performance is very important, just get people back on side and to try rebuild what has been a difficult last 12 months, particularly in that qualifying campaign. And I think players getting a good feel in an Irish jersey is very important, because we probably forget a lot of these players are super, super young and very early on in their career. They probably haven't had too many good days in an Irish jersey, and for some it may weigh heavy on their shoulders. So I think just getting a positive performance in one of the two games is vitally important, and maybe the personnel will grow into that jersey. And of course, listen, there's players who will play most of our games. For the ones who come in, it's an opportunity to grab that shirt and keep a hold of it.
It'll be interesting to see if Sammy Smodic does get that green jersey. He's the top scorer in the Championship, 21 league goals this season and 27 in all competitions. Versatile attacker. And today he spoke to Tony O'Donoghue and said he was delighted to be in the squad.
Last two squads I've been in, unfortunately, first one injured, second one had to go home for a personal reason. But all's good now. Obviously got the phone call from John, and it was a no-brainer for me. Like I said, I'm so excited to get into camp, and you know, we've had a good couple of days training, and I'm looking forward to the game at the weekend. You know, my form speaks for itself at the minute, and you know, like you said, I can play up front, I can play in the 10, I can play in the wide areas. So you know, for me, it's good because you can play a number of positions.
Hi Sammy, how are you?
Hi, yeah, not too bad, thanks.
Can you tell me how to pronounce Smodic?
Yeah, so the Z's basically silent, so it's Smodic.
Smodic.
Yeah.
Simple as that. Okay, yeah. Very good. And welcome.
Thank you.
Are you looking forward to making your debut?
Yeah, it's felt like a long time coming. I think it was a couple of years ago, the first call up, and you know, I wanted it back then. So you know, with the form and the amount of games I've played and seeing people get their debuts, it sort of made me hungrier for it, and I'm excited to hopefully get it the weekend.
What about the links to Hungary? Were they live? Were they real at any point?
No, it's all, like I've said before, it was all nonsense, really. You know, obviously Granddad was Hungarian, and that's obviously where the surname comes from, and it's just something that's never interested me. And you know, obviously their manager's come out and said what he's got to say about me. You know, I'm not really sure where it's come from, because I've never had any involvement or spoken to anyone from there. From their country, so you know I'm fully focused on Ireland and playing for them.
Ironically, you could end up playing against them in a couple of months.
Yeah, that will be a strange feeling. Yeah, so you know, hopefully just get this camp, you know, ticked off, get the games under my belt, and hopefully look forward to that one.
And John went to see you play. I think it was the Millwall game. You were on the score sheet that night.
Yeah,
I think Michael Obafemi might have scored that night as well. So when you look at your competition for places in the Irish team at the moment, then. You look at someone like Evan Ferguson, for example. I mean, are you confidently expecting to get a game, get a start?
No, listen, it's obviously up to John and, you know, the staff. I've done all I can at club level. Obviously, like you mentioned, some great names and some great lads in form, scoring goals. But like I've always said, I feel like I can come in and do a job and, you know, and help Ireland. And, you know, there's some good names in. It's good to have competition, so no one's comfortable. Everyone's always, you know, setting their standards high, and we're competing basically for them three front spots. And hopefully I've done enough and I can prove in training that, you know, if I don't get a start, I get a good chunk of minutes.
So Sammy Smaddix there speaking to our own Tony, who's sitting across from me in studio. Tony, what's he like?
I like him. He was very keen to kind of set the record straight. He felt that the Hungary manager had been, I guess, disrespectful in a way. He said that the reason that Smaddix had put out the Hungary kind of story, which Smaddix denies, was that it wanted to improve his chances of getting called up for Ireland. I think he's a little bit unhappy. He was called up first and was injured. Then there was a family reason in October. And then Stephen Kenny didn't pick him for the last squad, which turned out to be Stephen Kenny's last squad. And I think he was a little bit peeved about that because he felt, as you say, 21 goals in the Championship, 6 in the... I think he's the leading goal scorer in the FA Cup still. And, you know, he's in the form of his life. He thinks confidence is the reason for that. You can hear by him, he's a confident lad. He's 28 now.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And he's, you know, he's been around, but he's definitely in a good place in his football mind. And I think he's ready for a debut. I really do. And I think, you know, if he is to get an opportunity in the 10, I mean, making late runs into the box, you know, we have created chances before and we just haven't been scoring enough of them. I think you're going to have to give Evan Ferguson his opportunity. I mean, I think we'll be doing Evan a favour in a way if he can, mind you, scoring against Belgium isn't easy, but if he can, you know, end that scoring drought that he's had. But if Smaddix can be versatile enough to, you know, to work in the midfield and to assist up front, I think Johnson is magic at the moment. He is also in the form of his life. Ogbeni is playing. You know, did we ever think really when Chidozie Ogbeni was playing for Cork City and playing for Limerick that he'd be as good as he's become? And he really, you know, is. I mean, the credit is all his own in a way. I mean, his determination to succeed and to make himself a better player. And that gives me confidence. And as you can hear from Sammy Smaddix, he is confidence. And he felt that the Hungarian manager was just messing with his head, really, I think.
And Smaddix's goals have come in a team who are struggling in the Championship. Like, Blackburn's sitting 17th at the moment, so it's quite a contribution he has made to that side. And listen, we haven't exactly been blessed with goals within that team, so he's certainly playing himself into that position. And if you think of the relationship between kind of, you know, that big man, small man, Evan Ferguson, Sammy Smaddix, it probably looks good and it probably looks as like something that could work. So you would hope that if they were to play, that you could strike up a bit of a relationship between those two.
Paul is doubtful at 28, you're as fast as you were at 18, but experience to be in the right place, right time, read the game, surely the amount of games he's playing brings that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when strikers are banging form, Ruby, they sort of sense the positions to be in when the ball's in and around the 18-yard box. And when you're bang at it, you tend to find yourself in those positions more times than you're not. And listen, it hasn't exactly worked out brilliantly for Evan over the last couple of weeks and months. Completely expected, given how young he is and how early on he is in his career. Bringing Smaddix in maybe takes a little pressure off Evan's shoulders, and it gives us also another route to go. So you would be hoping to see that even if he doesn't get on the score sheet, that he finds himself in those positions. And the more times, like Tony mentioned there, that we can get into the final third and create chances, the more opportunities you put in front of the likes of Ferguson, Smaddix, the better opportunity you have of scoring goals within these games. And we haven't done that consistently enough. Maybe that has been down to the personnel. Bringing somebody like Smaddix certainly ups your chances of being that little bit more clinical in the final third.
It's great to have all these selection dilemmas like we do in goals, Tony.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting to watch the goalkeepers today. You know, led out. They do this indoor kind of what's called an activation session now. Paul would remember
those. That's impressive, Tony.
Yeah, I've got the terminology, but I can't activate my own muscles, unfortunately. And Caoimhín Kelleher came out first. Mark Travers, Gavin Bazunu, and Brian Maher, as I say, joined them as well for a really interesting session. Actually, can't claim to be any goalkeeping coaching expert, but a really interesting session under Rennie Gilmartin, and you know, it just proves as well how important modern goalkeeping is with their feet. I mean, they were doing well. It's hard for me to even explain it, whether we're on the radio or not. If I had a tactics board, I might. But they were really fast feet, moving around quickly, moving from hands to feet and left and right. It was an excellent session, now I have to say. And we're lucky to be blessed with excellent goalkeepers. And obviously the main two will be Gavin, who's, I suppose, in control of the jersey. But Caoimhín has been involved in more high-profile, more high-pressure games, you might say, in recent times. So that'll be an interesting dilemma for John O'Shea. And you know, it's great. It's John O'Shea's call ultimately. Yes, he'll talk to Brian Kerr, no doubt, and all the other technical expertise he has. But it's John's call.
One each.
Ooh.
That's sitting on the fence.
Is that, yeah, exactly? Is that funking it a bit? You know, I think you.
Does he need to pick? Does he need to pick one and say, right, that's.
Well, he's only there for two games, but yeah. I mean, I think he's got to be decisive, and I think he's got to prove to the rest of the players in the squad, in other positions as well, that he is decisive.
Yeah. Paul? I think he'll go with one each.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. I don't think Caoimhín's had many...
keeping with his nice guy image.
I just think they're both playing well and they're both having good opportunities at club level, that I think he'll want to give them the opportunity to do well in the Irish jersey. And I think Caoimhín hasn't probably had too many brilliant experiences. I can think of one or two mistakes where kind of balls into the box and he's maybe got caught up in two minds. I think he'll be
wanting...
Are you
saying for Ireland?
Ireland, yeah. I can't remember the game. It was a wide free kick, bounce, ended up in the top corner.
Yeah.
I just think he could do with having a you know, full 90 minutes in that Irish jersey and just give him an opportunity to work with that back four, back five.
It's not ideal either, as well as he has been playing the moments to concede four goals in your last game in a big, big game as it was.
I think he'll give them one each.
Don't think he could really be faulted for any of the four goals last weekend. Now they were in the corners, like.
Yeah, but mentally, if you let in four goals,
surely
you're still analysing them. Like, you're still thinking, right, I've let in four goals and we've lost an FA Cup quarterfinal. If I just saved one.
Yeah, but surely you go home and you analyse them. That's like writing four losers. I mean, you go home and look at it. Like, you can.
Oh, by the way, Ruby. I mean, I'm so with John O'Shea in this for this week. He gave me Straw Fan Jack and Life in the Park when I spoke to him on the the day he announced the squad, and he told me he was in Cheltenham on Tuesday. I don't know if you saw him or not.
I didn't, but I have met him in Cheltenham in the past, and I've met him in a few racing yards around the world. He does enjoy his horse racing, John, the same John O'Shea, so he does.
Give him an old text there and ask him what goalie he's going for. Really. Give him a few tips in return.
Definitely not. Unlikely to tell me. You go one each as well, Paul Curry. And yeah, no Lukaku or Kevin De Bruyne. What kind of a Belgian team are we looking at?
Well, unfortunately, they still have Jeremy Doku.
Yeah.
And they've Leandro Trossard, who are banging form at club level. So I think irrespective of what 11 they'll put out, they'll be strong, Ruby. And listen, Belgium are preparing for bigger things, and there's probably not too many opportunities between now and the summer for certain players to make their way into that squad. So this won't be a friendly that they will take lightly. I'm sure that they will go, and for the players who go out on the day, massive opportunity to make themselves available for that squad in the summer. So what you'll expect from Belgium is to be very good in possession of the ball. I think they've shown that over the last number of years. The only criticism that people have had is that they haven't gone deep enough into competitions, but the fact that they've gone in as close to favourites in a number of those competitions will give you an idea of the strength and depth. I'd say the centre halves are delighted that there's no Lukaku, and I'm sure the midfielders are delighted there's no Kevin De Bruyne, but don't take away from the fact that they will be super, super strong come the weekend.
I'd say Lukaku is delighted he's not coming up against Jake O'Brien, the size of that young man.
I wish I must go out and have a look and see what 6'5", Tony? 6'6"?
6'6", I think,
oh,
yeah.
Wow. Just on Evan Ferguson, you did mention him, Tony, and he has gone through a very unfortunate goal drought, and I think everybody wants him to do well and loves it when he's scoring goals, and just feel a bit bad that he's going through this, because it does seem like a tough enough time when you're not performing.
But he scored goals all his young life and everywhere he's gone. And, you know, as Paul was saying, this does happen. You go through spells. And sometimes, you know, he hasn't started every game for Brighton either. There was a period where he was on the bench and came on almost like clockwork in the 61st or 62nd minute. And confidence can be a factor. And we talked about Sammy Smodics being 28. I mean, Evan Ferguson is 19, you know. So I would say give him a break. I think he keeps getting into the right positions. And, you know, he'll score against Belgium and then he'll get hatful of goals.
And then he'll be back, been sold again for 100 million, Paul.
Yeah, I guess the one question mark that I'd have heard a couple of people saying is that, like, he signed, what, two or three contracts, it seems, in the last 18 months. And I'm sure the last one was a big one. And maybe that has coincided with his slight dip in form. And maybe people are putting two and two together. I'd be very surprised if that's the case. He comes across as a really professional young man. He's built for occasions like this. He's built to play in this Irish team, and he will absolutely be at the forefront of everything we do. It's just a bit of a sticky patch for him at the moment. And we talked about Sammy Smodics and his ability to score goals. It could just be one that kickstarted Evan into a really good streak of form and continue that into the end of the season. But starting a game and getting a feel for a game will certainly help, because he probably hasn't been given a huge amount of opportunities at Brighton of late to start games and grow into them. Coming off the bench is hard at times, getting to the rhythm of the game, starting in this Irish side. He's one of our main men. I'm sure he'll be full of confidence going into the game against Belgium and Switzerland, and hopefully he just gets a goal. Doesn't matter how it goes in, but he can build from there.
Tony, let's call a spade here. This Irish team hasn't exactly been on an upward trajectory. What would you take at the weekend and next week?
Well, you know, without there being bravado about it, they were confident. Some of the players were asked that today. And, you know, I think they sat down in the hotel and had a good long chat. And that's the mental game is so important as well. And, you know, I think they're going to go out to win against Belgium. You know, if it was a competition and you'd look at where you are in the table and what you need and the permutations of what's to come, I don't see it as a shot to nothing, but I see it as a game where you can set your stall out and go for it. Belgium are a very good side, absolutely. But the last time Belgium played in Dublin, which isn't that long ago, I think it was 2-2. So yeah, I'd be hopeful of a decent performance to begin with, because you have to start with performing, doing the basics right, starting well. First of all, picking the right team to start, then starting well, then getting the crowd on your side, then trying to create chances, then trying to get goals. And, you know, they're all building blocks really, aren't they? And if you can do all that, and if you've got the positive mental attitude of going out there to win the game, and sometimes maybe we've gone out there almost afraid of the occasion or afraid of the opposition or not trusting ourselves. So there's a lot to be done this week, but there's a lot to do. And I think that this team is full of potential. I'm so glad that Seamus Coleman is back, though. I think that's what we need as well, you know, on the pitch as well as off it. I mean, look, Paul, you know better than me. You know, you can hear all the instructions, but then you're the one who crosses the white line, and then you've got to, you know, use the instructions you've been given and pull a performance out of yourself and the rest of your teammates.
Yep, I think it's going to be difficult. To Tony's point, I think a performance is very important. I think what people have been asking for post Stephen Kenny is just for the team to be a bit more pragmatic, and I would expect that that's how we will set up. I don't think we'll be overplaying out from the back or trying silly things at our own final third. I think you'll see a nice mix and a nice variation in our play. I don't think we'll be afraid to go up long to Evan Ferguson and play off him and get bodies around him, but also at the same time, when we get the ball in midfield, expect to play. So you probably can't underestimate Belgium at the same time. Like, if you're too expansive, you could find yourself with lots of gaps and being punished by a top team. But I think a performance, I take a draw, Ruby, at this point.
But the other thing is, if we are to go behind, which of course is very likely against a decent team, how we respond to that. I mean, how John O'Shea acts in game is going to be very interesting to watch as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Okay, Paul, Tony, thank you so much for coming in. We're going to take a very quick break. Stay with us, though. So much to come. We have Paul Townend towards the end of the programme. We're also going to be talking Gaelic football, and we'll be hearing from the Ireland rugby women's rugby manager, Scott Bemond.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back now. Ahead of Ireland's women kicking off their Six Nations campaign against France this Saturday, our own Neil Tracy spoke to Ireland head coach Scott Bemond, who's looking forward to beginning the championship as a head coach for the very first time.
Yeah, slightly different. Obviously, I was involved with the Roses for a good while and an assistant coach, and we work really tightly as a coaching group. So now I've got an opportunity to lead the programme. I'm trying to take all the learnings and all the stuff that we got right in that previous role and try and build some coaching synergy, program synergy, because it's obviously more than just coaching, backroom staff as well. So we're getting there. We're getting there. We're working with a great group of people that are passionate and invested in trying to make Ireland women's rugby successful again.
Obviously, you've had a campaign already with the WXV, but what was it like over the last few months coming in from a team where winning was expected and winning tournaments was kind of expected year on year to a side that needed to be picked up and are kind of early on in their evolution?
Ah, great question. First of all, I don't think you should ever shy away from wanting to win. Winning's habitual. It's why we do it. We like competing. I'd like to sort of define myself as a competitor. So if we're going out there to win, then you work back from that process. What does winning look like? Well, the first thing you've got to get right is performances. How you build confident performance. So the group were where they were at the start. WXV played a bit of a role actually in building a bit of confidence, spending some time together, working out who we wanted to be, what our identity was. What we wanted people to say about us when they saw us play, when they see us train. So there's been a huge amount of work gone on in the background, like from the cultural reset to the playing identity, to the training identity, to what we're like with each other and how we challenge and support each other. So it was 6 months in now. Now it's time to go and test it in the Six Nations.
As you said, the WXV gave an opportunity to put a bit of confidence into players. Did you notice when you came in, like there were a lot of very, very young players and inexperienced players in the squad that weren't actually used to the feeling of winning in an international jersey?
100%. So I've coached against them, last year, Six Nations. And look, if you get your hands on a young team with potential, like you've just got to harness it and tap into it. So with a lot of those players, they had a bit of a tough time, and we had a couple of hit outs against international teams, and the first thing we noticed is like, guys, you just got to give yourself permission to be good, permission to try things, permission to go after things in a confident way. So WXV played a big role in that, getting to spend 3 weeks preparation, 3 weeks over in Dubai, the heat of Dubai. It allowed us to build a core. And I think hopefully we've managed to keep that going over the few months that it's into Celtic Challenge and now into this bit. I've got on record of saying Celtic Challenge is in its second iteration. That will only become a bigger and bigger part of our development and getting us ready for Six Nations.
You've said, and the players have said as well, like the stated aim is World Cup qualification for next year. With what people expect to happen, that would probably mean a third place finish. How confident are you that this team can bridge the gap between sixth from last year to potentially a top three?
So there's a few ways we can qualify. The first way, obviously with England and France qualifying through the achieving semi-final placing at the last World Cup, it goes to the next place. So third place is automatic qualification through the Six Nations route. Should we not achieve that, we can do it through the WXV tournament. So there's a few ways of getting there. Essentially, fourth and fifth will find themselves in WXV2, and then the qualification process will be through that WXV2. If you finish bottom of the pile, then you would play a decider, a playoff game against another European team. So there's a few ways that we can qualify still, but we'd be daft not to target trying to qualify at the first opportunity. Is it a stretch goal? Yes, we know where we've come from, but is it doable? I believe in the potential of the group.
And finally then, France this weekend. You've obviously seen France over the last number of years from working with England, so you know plenty about them. What sort of a team can you expect from France? What sort of a style of play? What is there that you believe you can go after?
Playing against France was always my favourite games. They're tough to beat. They're a good team. They've earned the right to call themselves World Cup contenders. They'll be Six Nations Championship contenders. So we know what we're up against. Like, I've been fortunate enough to have a few successes against France over the last few years. Well, I've had a relatively recently good winning run against them. I think going back to 2018. So we know some bits. We know some bits that will test them. Going over there, they'll be full of French flair, they'll be full of atmosphere in the stadium. They're a big and physical team and they can kick the ball. So they've got a few different ways they can go at it. What we do know is, you know, if we can get them under pressure, we can start getting footholds in the game, start to build some wins. And then, as you know, start taking lumps out of people, then people start to doubt what they do and kind of feeds our momentum. So that's what we'll be going after.
Well, it's a tough start and it's the very best look for the rest of the Six Nations. Scott Beaman, thanks for talking to us.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. We are turning our attention to Gaelic football. Brendan Devaney is on the line and Austin O'Malley is with me in studio. So after round six, we know that Monaghan's decade-long stay in Division 1 is over after their defeat to Tyrone. So they have been relegated to Division 2. It looks like Derry and Dublin are the favourites to play in the final. And at the other end of the table, it'll either be Galway or Roscommon who will join Monaghan in Division 2 next year. So still a huge amount to play for. So after all we've seen so far, Brendan Devaney, who has impressed you the most?
Yes, me. Listen, you know, the jury's out in the league. Me, I think in terms of, say, who wants to win it and what's happening in it and how seriously it's taken as a competition, I think it's very much about finding form, unearthing players and getting a bit of styling. But I really think all the well-organised, you know, teams with a deep squad, it's suiting them in terms of you can see it and they're flexing their muscles as the season was on. And you think after Dublin, after the poor start, of course, Monaghan's only victory, they have really turned the corner. I tipped Derry from the get-go. And I think if you look at it even from the weekend, you know, Derry hitting 315, 24 points, Dublin hitting 22 points. They're way out in front in terms of their points difference over everybody else in the league. So by far in Division 1, they have been the two that have been setting the standard, indeed, me. And of course, Armand Donegal looks like, you know, they're obviously coming up from Division 2 as well. So I think they look like two teams that should be in Division 1. So it's going to make for a very interesting one, because I think Roscommon and Monaghan have been well off the pace for me in this division. And luckily two teams are going to get relegated, and next year all them sides is in it. Pick who's going to go down from them. It's going to be some scrap next season. Mm-hmm. But certainly, as I say, Derry and Dublin have been the two impressive carriages behind them.
Obviously Roscommon go to Derry at the weekend, need a result there, and they need to hope that Galway don't get one against Kerry. But Austin, would you agree with Brendan? Derry and Dublin are a good bit ahead, but the others are only half flexing their muscles.
Yeah, no, look, I'd agree with Brendan. I think Derry and Dublin, just where their game is at the moment, like you can see in terms of their scoring power, but also defensively, they just look so solid. Like, again, just looking at Dublin over the weekend with the way they just sort of dispatched Galway, and they were so clinical and crisp and clean and everything they'd done. And looking back over there, you're probably looking at that they probably had maybe out, what, eight of their, what you'd say, perceivably maybe, you know, their starting championship team. Like, they had a pretty rookie full back line of Newcombe. He's looking at McMahon, Killian Murphy, and they're still, you know, holding Galway at bay there. And Derry were just so, I thought, so economical and impressive against Mayo. You know, Mayo conceding 315 at home, which would be a worry. But Derry, for me, again, they're just so clear in terms of their approach defensively and up front what they're at. So I think Brendan's right. They're far and away ahead of where everybody else is at the moment.
I wanted to ask you, Brendan, about Peter Canavan's thoughts on the league final, and I will in a second, because I was reminded then of Dara Canavan's goal over the weekend. You must have enjoyed that as a sharpshooter yourself.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess from everything we look at now in football, you think when there's a moment of brilliance, the guy, like, where was the ball in defence? But listen, outside of that, I mean the pass from Morgan, I mean, he's basically on his end line. I mean, that man is, I think he thinks outside the box, and, you know, he's a bit of a character. And for him to even take that on board, because I think the Tyrone lads wanted the ball to go out, maybe to get a breather. He had other ideas. He spots Canavan and he pings this ridiculous ball over the top. Now, the only thing to me is Bannigan was the man was chasing back at him. They're half forward, and McCurry was making a 70-yard break up the other side, and I think he had a corner forward coming with 15 his back was chasing him down. And you're thinking, where was the likes of O'Toole? Where was their covering players? Wiley, you know. But listen, taking all the way from Canavan, he runs forward, and you were thinking he's going to set it up for McCurry. He kind of stepped aside because the tackle was coming on him. It was some effort for Bannigan to get back, but as he lost it then, the way he hits the ball, he's just an absolute special player. And you think about all those top players out there, you know, Kevin McCurry, obviously McGuigan, Clifford, you know, Conn, what he's doing there, Reynolds, Donahue, you know, Comer and Walsh. the top teams that are at the top are pulling away from the rest because they have players like this. If you look at the teams at the bottom, Roscommon and Monaghan, nobody's stepping up with that type of talent. I think that's what separates them. But it's absolutely phenomenal goal. Just the cuddle of dad. What a talent. Brilliant guy to come and watch. And on a night like that, to do what he did, it was a special moment.
Well, Aston, Brendan has listed out a raft of players there that just don't grow on trees. I mean, it's no shame to any county not to have one of those.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And God, when you just rattle them off there, they're all, you know, brilliant individuals. And, you know, I had this conversation recently with someone that the more our game is changing and the more it's going to kind of defensive structures and sitting people behind the ball and all that, it's these guys that are, we obviously call them, a lot of them are generational players that have the ability to unhinge, you know, these defences and bring something, as Brendan says there, a little bit of thinking outside the box, a little bit of kind of maverick stuff to light up. And I think it's they're becoming so more important in the game now with the way, you know, teams are setting up. And even looking at the games over the weekend there, the four Division 1 games, like, even though a lot of them mirrored tactically the way everybody was set up, they were averaged like 37 points a game in terms of when you aggregate the scores. So, like, you know, we deride about the game about, you know, defensive and being negative, but like, teams are finding ways through these defences and picking off. So, and it's down to these guys that are this level of creativity and thinking outside the box and finding their ways around it, like, which is brilliant. Like, it just, they're a joy to watch. And Canavan, he's just so special. Like,
the speed and the balance and power, everything. Yeah.
The majesty of him, even like, you know, when he dropped that ball, that, you know, to have the ingenuity
I thought it was gone.
Yeah, to catch it on the half volley, and literally, you know, I think Darren McCurry was having a laugh at him half time saying, it's a good job with him, because I was at the back post and I was after bursting my lungs to get there. So, yeah, but they are special.
Brendan, Peter was on League Sunday on Sunday night, and he reckons that the time has come to get rid of the league finals. What do you think?
Yeah, well, listen, most leagues are won by the team that's at the top. I just think because it's a shorter league, the way it's played, there was a thing about a league final and another big day, but I think with Championship on the horizon, who really wants it? I think if whoever's at the top, by the way, should it be score difference or whatever it is, I think everybody would be happy enough to say they're the champions and let it go, because we don't really need that extra day. Now, you know, some people might say for some of those sides that maybe the provincials aren't as strong, they wouldn't mind a game. But again, I don't think anybody's overly worried about a league final showpiece. I think for our man Donegal, there's probably something in there that they would like a good tight game, maybe going into the Championship. But really, I think whoever stopped the league, that's what a league's supposed to be. You know, you're at the top, you won it, and I think that's how it should go, yeah.
In your day, would you have preferred a league final or a warm weather training camp, Brendan?
Yeah, warm weather training.
All
some
day.
Of our warm weather trainings turned on the many nights out, and then a sweat out the next day. You know, Zambuca rolling off the chin kind of situation. So
that sounds good to me.
After last week, Ruby, I would say you're on the detox this week, my man.
It's been a slow week, all right. It's been a slow week this week. Good cause for celebration we had last week. We'll get to that next, so we will. What about Division 2 then, Austin? Obviously, Armagh and Donegal are coming up, and they are flying. Championship round the corner, and they really want to be back in Division 1.
They do, yeah, and most impressive of that, obviously you have Jim McGuinness back in with Donegal, and they've really set their stall out early and the way they're moving. But like, I thought Armagh was really impressive, obviously, against Cavan the weekend, and just the scores they ran up. And, you know, we've probably been talking over the last couple of seasons about Armagh's identity and what they're trying to establish in terms of a game plan and that, but they just look to have got it together now, and they're a lot more fluent in terms of their attack. They're kicking, Turbot on fire up front, you know, they're just, it looks that they're really flowing at the moment. And you know, they put up a huge score there the weekend, so they look like in a really, really good spot, and things look like they're coming together. Equally, as you said, Donegal as well, so that's been an interesting, obviously, division. Your own home county, Kildare, obviously have dropped down, and I think as the way it stands, they'd have to make a Leinster final whether they make Sam Maguire run or not out of that. But that's been a really tight division, you know, all the way out, and there's a lot at stake still in it, obviously, with the Louth and Fermanagh hanging on there at the bottom as well.
Yeah, it's been really interesting. You must be delighted with how Donegal's going, Brendan.
Yeah, going great. Listen, loads of injuries still, you know, and I think there's a few counties like that, Galway as well, have an absolute raft of injuries. So, listen, it's forcing players to come in. You like a Killian O'Kareen for Galway hitting 8 points. You know, players are forced into positions. You know, my own club mate is playing full back, Moore, for Donegal. And it's a position we had never seen him play because Donegal picked up another injury at the back to McCall. So there are 5 or 6 players out that still could come in. Some of them have seen some game time, but of course, if they haven't played in a while now, they're not going to be ready for that. But certainly, it's been an interesting league. And just as Oscar was saying there, I mean, Armagh 2-12 in the first half. And if you look at teams like, for example, Roscommon going down, and Oscar's mentioned tactics there, they didn't have a proper go at Kerry. You know, 4 points in the first half with the breeze. They sat in their shape and they allowed Kerry to have the ball. You know, I think if you're looking at all the top teams, they're pressing kickouts, they're really having a go. And if you think that's a small difference I see with Derry this year, they're willing to go for that bit of risk reward where they're attacking up the pitch. Sure, they conceded more than they would like against Mayo, but they hit 3:15. And I think they realise when they get to Croke Park, if they're going to outscore one of the big teams, they have to do that. And you're seeing that with Iron Man. Funny, Aussie said about the identity. You know, big, strong, powerful team. Merlin and the likes of Turbot inside. Rian O'Neill still to come back. And I think that's what you're seeing with the big teams. They really want to go and have a cut and push teams, put the pressure on and get the scores up rather than it used to be sitting on counter attack. And I think that's the big change with all the top teams.
Okay, lots to look forward to. Thank you as always. We'll be checking in with you both again next week. We'll see how all of the league finishes up. We're going to take a very quick break, but do stay with us. We'll be talking to Paul Townend after all the action at Cheltenham last week.
Game on 2FM.
On Tuesday the 19th of March, I'm delighted to say we are going to be joined now on the line by Paul Townend, fresh from his exploits in Cheltenham last week. Paul, how are you?
All good, Ruby. All good, ye.
Oh, we're getting on fine. Paul, you went straight from Cheltenham to Thurles on Sunday, or Saturday, Down Royal on Sunday. I'm assuming you had Monday off. Tonight you're outside the Lord Bagnall, galloping to Champa's, welcomed by the local community. Did you get a good crowd?
Massive crowd, Ruby. Massive turnout here. Statesman and the bumper horse came down as well. So, no, it was a bit drier here this year. And, no, it was a huge turnout. So, fair play to everyone for coming out.
I've never been to one of these homecomings. What happens?
Just we've brought down the three horses and paraded them over the bridge here in Nocton Bridge. And plenty of pictures and plenty of autographs and things. So, no, it's a huge racing community around here, so it was well supported for sure.
And then the real party starts, Marie. They go into the Lord Bagnall, and it's called a pub, and you celebrate.
Oh, right. Well, the ads were on there, and Ruby was doing a bit of dancing, so maybe you're planning on going down, Ruby, are you?
No, it's a week off I need. But, Paul, it was a huge week for you and a very intense week. It started well on Tuesday, Gaelic Warrior, Stateman, Lassiemouth. Was it a dream start? It had to have been.
Yeah, of course. When you get over there to a winner is brilliant. It kind of just relaxes everything down a little bit, and Gaelic Warrior done that and gave me a bit of confidence in going out and Stateman in the champion hurdle. So because he done what he always does, just turns up and wins. And obviously Lassiemouth then was so impressive in the mares at the end of the day. So I suppose it started brilliant, got a bit quiet in the middle. Ballyburn was obviously very good Wednesday, but we had a blank on Thursday, and Tuesday seemed a long time ago then when we walked in on Friday.
A lot of elite sports people approach big events, big games, like any other game. They stick to the process, all that sort of stuff. Do you when you're heading into Cheltenham, Paul?
You do, but look, there's no point saying it doesn't bring a little bit of extra pressure. It is Cheltenham. It does bring an extra bit of excitement and things with it. But the horses don't know that it's any bigger than any other day. So no, you do your homework the same as you would for any other meeting, and hope you're on the right one and try and perform then on the day.
And it is about performing on the day. But when you went back in there on Friday, as you said, no winner on Thursday. Not that would knock confidence, but you're heading into Galloping the Champ, trying to win back-to-back Gold Cups, and you head out in Absurd in the county hurdle. How exactly did you manage to be as confident on him as you were with such a big ride coming?
I suppose it's just the privilege of riding for Willie, I suppose, Ruby, you know it yourself. You could take a chance and drop him in like that, because if it didn't come off, you know he'll have your back, and he knows you're doing it for the right reasons. The ground has obviously, we talk on against Absurd, so you know, we're going to have to try and keep our powder dry as long as we could. And when he managed to win from there, it was a huge boost of confidence again to go back out and gallop him.
You looked like you got a fair kick over too.
I did. It was one over there with no pressure really. The horses are just heading off here now. They're giving them a good send off, so that's what the horns are blowing. But no, it's when you go to Cheltenham for Willie, it's huge pressure, and you know, as I said, we taught the ground on the prep start, so I kind of a free rein to do what I did on them. Then,
how hard is it to pick what horses you're going to go on?
It's not easy. A lot of work goes into it. Like the week of Cheltenham is probably easier than the 2 weeks before it, when you're studying all the little bits of form. The Dublin Racing Festival has been a huge help in kind of picking out the pecking order a little bit as well. So you're just watching what's in good form, what's progressing the right way, and you don't always get it right, but you know, it's a team. You're listening to everyone at home as well that's riding the horses every day. They know them better than I do, and they'll know if they're, you know, if they're going the right way, or if they're just starting to come right at the right time.
I used to love getting on a horse in the parade ring on a big pressure ride, say getting on Cod or Star, like you were getting on Gallop in the Champ, just to be on him, to get away from everybody else, just to be me and the horse. Do you get that feeling? The same?
Oh, definitely.
Release of pressure?
Definitely. You can hide from it a little bit in the weigh room. If the couple of minutes you're standing in the parade ring with the noise and everything, that's probably the longest couple of minutes. But once you get up in them, get out the chute, I suppose since you're retired, I'm getting acknowledged a little bit more going out the chute on the more fancied ones. So, you know, that's nice. You know, it adds to you. It makes you sharper, I think. A little bit of pressure channeled the right way can make you a lot sharper. And, you know, if you can channel that in the right way, it's an advantage.
Had you any nervous moment in that Gold Cup?
Plenty. It actually went relatively like I thought. The loose horse gave me a couple of anxious moments, all right, but thankfully he behaved himself. They're just so unpredictable, you don't know what way they're going to go, but he stayed straight, and instead of causing the interference, he probably helped me a little bit, having something to race with up the straight, because it's so far up there, and especially on the testing ground I was there this year.
You've got to turn to a crowd more often than I have after winning a Gold Cup. There is nothing quite like it.
Nothing. You know, riding a fancied winner, a big favourite or pressure one like that is brilliant. The reception they get coming in, but I feel the Gold Cup just standing on. I suppose in relief that you've won, but it's just the atmosphere and everything with it. It is the pinnacle. It's the best horses, the best jockeys. The tempo of the race is stronger than any other race. And yeah, it's a very, very special feeling.
And I'd imagine makes you want more and more of it.
Every time. Yeah, every time. It's, you know, when I was lucky enough to win the first one, it was a bit of a surprise. And to back it up in the second time, a bit more pressure. I wasn't sure if it would be as exciting, but it actually seems to be getting better. So, it's one I wouldn't mind doing again if I could.
I shared a flight home and which on Saturday night with your partner Sophie, Friday night even with your partner Sophie, you had disclosed to me you had managed to get two slices of toast into you that morning. Did you get your McDonald's?
I got my McDonald's, really. I did, and I was grateful for it. I was really starving. You're running on pure adrenaline, to be honest. We got the crisps on the plane and we got the McDonald's, so we were all happy afterwards.
Simple pleasures.
And the small pleasures in life. On the Thurles, on to Down Royal. Surely you've had some bit of a party since. There's not much this week.
We haven't really, to be honest. Paddy's weekend and the whole thing crashed down on top of me. So we'll have a little bit tonight, I'm sure. There's a good crowd here, good few supporters here. So we'll have something quiet tonight. And as you say, it's quiet for the next couple of days. So for next weekend. So I'm sure we'll get a celebration in somewhere.
I'm sure you will. Well deserved, Paul. Thanks so many for taking our call. Enjoy your night. And that is about all we have time for on Game On this evening. Maria, are you back tomorrow?
I'm not.
You're not?
I think so. I'm not sure what day it is.
It is Tuesday.
Then I'm not. It is Shane.
Shane's back tomorrow. That's all we have time for. Better listen to us up next. Thanks for listening.
RTE 2FM.